You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, I actually started my worldview segment and realized that after about 40 minutes that I was pretty far in to be able to do a main topic. So today, I'm actually just publishing my worldview segment as the main topic. Okay, and so I talk about the convention of states in depth and why we all really need to get involved in it. On today's worldview segment, I want to talk about the convention of the states. This is an extremely important topic today in American politics because the balance of power between the federal government and the states is out of whack. And so I posted on Facebook the other day a link to sign the petition or a petition for the convention of the states. But the real work is in each individual state. And this is important. So what I'm going to talk about today is kind of how this is laid out. The reason why, what I think is the solution and then the strategy behind it. Because I think that's where we're at. As you'll see, I don't think that we can go to our legislators in Congress right now for the answer. Because, quite frankly, they're part of the problem. And that's both sides of the aisle. So my political philosophy, I am not a Democrat because most of what they stand for completely contradicts my faith, what I consider to be right and wrong, and I think that they just exhibit bad policy, bad governance. I am also not a Republican. I have distanced myself from the Republican Party for the last several years. Now, there are a handful of good Republican legislators out there, but they're a minority. The rest of the Republican Party are what I consider to be rhinos, and that is Republican in name only. So if you were to sum up my philosophy of government, I would use a very simple, easy, short book to help you to understand it. And that's Frederick Bastiat's The Law. The Law. Great book. I think everyone should read that book. If you have any interest in liberty at all, that is a must read. It'll kind of give you the flair. I don't have time to go into all of it today, but it is a great book. So the United States government was laid out in a system via the Constitution of what we would call federalism. And federalism in the U.S., and it's a concept that's recognized all over the place, but there's tweaks to it when you come to different countries. So, for example, in the U.S., federalism simply is that relationship between the federal government and the state governments. It's the balance of power. It's the basically the setting up of different lanes. So this lane is the federal government's, and this lane is the state government's realm, and they shouldn't cross over. Okay, that's what's gotten out of whack. So the way the American government was set up was the states had a lot of power. A lot of, in fact, if it wasn't laid out that the federal government could specifically do it in the Constitution, that it was up to the states. Okay, so that's what I'm talking about today. That's quote-unquote federalism. It's different than, say, Canada or Australia, where there is a stronger central authority, even though there's provinces and states, etc., in many different countries in the world. The United States was unique in this way, in that the state governments had much more power. Okay, so that's, like I said, is a little bit out of whack. All right, so I want to talk about the problem right now. And the problem is that the federal government has overreached its constitutionally established boundaries. Okay, that's the bottom line. They've exceeded their authority. And this is important, and it's really important to think through as Christians, because when we look at things like Romans 13, we are called to be good citizens. However, I think a lot of Christians are misunderstanding that, and that we are to be, you know, good citizens. However, the government has its authority. When it exceeds its authority, we are not obligated to follow that, and we are not obligated to follow the government if they are in contradiction to God's law. Okay? Now, we could go back and forth with that over and over again, but what I want to hit here right now is the problem that I see with the federal government. And what I would say breaks down into four major abuses of their boundaries. Okay? And they are bad policy. That's part of it. But what the real danger there is that they are leading us down a road of what we call soft tyranny or soft despotism, where the government, they're not literally, well, who knows, may get there, but they're not literally shooting people, with the military, you know, like in Soviet Russia, but they're bending and guiding and softening the will of the people through regulations and other means of intimidation. Whether that's manipulating the states or the regulations directly down to the people. Because think about this for a minute. Does it make sense to anyone, if you just stop and think for a minute, that the federal government, that Washington, D.C., the giant federal government of the United States of America, is all the way down into the schoolhouse of some little school in Arkansas or Idaho to tell administrators what those kids should eat? Okay, that's one example of many of an overreach of the federal government. The federal government has no business telling what kids should eat in schools. Okay, well, number one, that should be up to the parents. And number two, if you must, then it should be decided locally. All right, so here's a quick quote from Alex de Tocqueville in his work, Democracy in America. This was 1840. And it has to do with basically, if we do nothing to halt the abuses of government, we run the risk of becoming kind of like sheep. And he says, quote, "A flock of timid and industrious animals of which the government is the shepherd," unquote. Okay, so here's the four things. Number one, the spending and debt crisis. Okay, we just recently surpassed $17 trillion. I've hit on this a couple times. $17 trillion in debt. Staggering. Not going down. Still overspending. Still no balanced budget. Both sides of the aisle are guilty of this. Okay? Yeah, maybe Obama is particularly bad. But he's you know, we can't blame the debt on Obama, all right? Congress, previous presidents, this is an ongoing issue. He tends to be particularly bad in this area, but, you know, he could have been stopped. They could have defunded him. They could have passed balanced budget amendments. They could have passed budgets. I mean, Congress is to blame. Republicans are just as much to blame as Democrats for failing to do things. Okay, so $17 trillion plus in debt. And I don't know if you noticed, but on the last day of 2014, you had a massive jump in debt. It's all accounting tricks and smoke and mirrors. But the bottom line is massive overspending. But here's the real problem. When you start looking at unfunded liabilities, and those are mainly entitlements like Social Security and other programs like that, the amount the federal government has already promised is about $100 trillion or more. Okay, that's not sustainable at all. And think about this for a minute. If the federal government right now confiscated everything from every single American, it would not cover the debt. Everything. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing is the regulatory crisis. Now, this is kind of what I'm talking about the federal government getting into school lunches and whether or not you can dig a pond in your backyard or collect rainwater or you know, things like that. And it is a crisis. The regulatory burden upon businesses is complex, and it's stifling. Okay, it is not just a problem with, in this case, it's not just a problem with federal government. It's also state government problems, and people should be working hard in their states to overcome this. Okay, when you can't set up a small business without having to jump through massive hoops or pay lots of money, there's a problem. Okay, and ironically, it's probably easier in the United States to start a business than in most places in the world, but it is still very difficult. Okay, so it's not a good thing. And we can, you know, talk about how much federal regulations have increased in the last, whatever, 30, 40 years. It's amazing. Okay, and it's not doing anything to help the country. Okay, the third thing is this. So again, the first is spending and debt. Second was regulations or overregulation. The third is congressional attacks on state sovereignty. This is vital, and this is why we're at the convention of the states, as opposed to working through John Boehner, for example, in the House of Representatives, who's done nothing. Congressional attacks on state sovereignty. So Congress uses federal grants. This is what's ironic. Federal money is used to control states, period. I don't care if you're talking about education or roads or whatever the case is. The federal government holds the states hostage, really, in many ways through the use of money. And it's ironic because the federal government collects money from all the taxpayers and then returns and divvies it out to the states based on their behavior, which should immediately tell you that we're out of whack when it comes to federalism. So using money to control states, this is a major problem. Okay, the fourth is the federal takeover of the decision-making process. Okay, so again, like I talked about in the beginning, the founders believed that the structures of a limited government would provide the greatest protection of liberty. That's why we put so much emphasis on checks and balances. That's why we have three branches of government with their own lanes. It was to be shared between the federal government and state governments. With the former exercising those powers specifically granted in the Constitution. So in other words, I'll say this one more time, the federal government derives its power from what is explicitly stated in the Constitution. Okay, everything else falls to the states. So if it isn't stated in the federal or in the Constitution, the federal government can't do it. That's how it was set up. That's not how we're operating now. So collusion and intimidation and coercion has replaced checks and balances. We have to address the structural problems. That's what we really need to address. Is this? We have a structural problem. Someone once said that there's three things required for good governance, and that is, you know, to find good people, to have good policy, and to have good structure. All right. Now, what we generally concentrate on in American politics is good people and good policy. All right. You know, we think that if we just get this guy in as president, then everything will be well. That's not true. I mean, even if Obama wasn't reelected, and what the alternative was Romney, things would not be fixed right now, people. Not even close. All right? They're very similar, actually. You know, besides their talking points, when it really comes down to it, they're very similar. You know, Romney might drive us towards the cliff 10 miles per hour slower than Obama. That would be about the best we can do there. Okay, so what we're addressing here in Convention of the States is structure. Because good people, good policy, it's not working. Addressing it that way, addressing American politics that way, is not working. There are some good people in Congress, but they're overwhelmed by the machine. Okay, good policy. We haven't seen good policy come out of government for a long time. You see little bits here and there. You see some states fighting back, which is encouraging. That's what we need. That's why we're here. That's why we're talking about the Convention of the States. I think that's the point where we're at, is that the states don't stand up, game over. Okay? So that's why I'm passionate about this. I think this is where we are. So the DC, you know, the DC, everything coming out of DC is broken. And there's nothing but an expansion of those boundaries of federal power. And I don't care what side of the aisle you're talking about. Sure. The on the left, they'll talk. They basically want to scrap the Constitution. I mean, they'll make no bones about it. They'll give it some lip service, but they essentially want to scrap it. They don't like it. And you know, the right gives lip. I think they give lip service to it as well. They talk about it, but the bottom line is that they expand federal power. You know, maybe not as much as the left, but they're expanding federal power and they're overspending, etc. So they're not the solution. Okay. So this framework, although it was designed to be flexible, it is gotten out of control. Okay. So what is then the solution? We talked about the problem. So these four things, and there's more. There's a lot more. That's just kind of an overview. But so the solution. All right. The solution, I think our shot at a solution is found in Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. And let me read that for you. So this is Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution. It says, "The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect this the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate." Okay, so I want to key in on, you see, the first part was about Congress. It was about the Harry Reids and the John Boehners, you know, coming together to propose amendments, you know, if they could gather that kind of support, two-thirds. Okay, that's non-existent. Even with Republicans controlling the House and the Senate, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. There's too many rhinos in there, way too many. And they wouldn't have two-thirds anyway. But here's what I want to focus in on. Here's the middle part of it. It says, "On the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments." That's what we're talking about. That's a convention of the states. It comes from Article 5 of the Constitution, and it is a method. It is a check and balance when the federal government has become out of control. So that's what we're trying to do. That's not me personally. This was, I first saw this from Michael Ferris, who has argued in front of the Supreme Court. He's the, I think he's the president of Patrick Henry College, which is an excellent law school. He was a former director of Homeschool Legal Defense Association. So he's the one who's really pushing this. I know he's at one of the main creators of this movement, and I do believe that there is a few states that have already signed on to this. Okay, so again, Article 5, what we're talking about here is the Convention of the States. There's two parts to it. There's what Congress can do, and there's what the states can do. So the states is what we're looking at here. All right, so it says that Congress can propose amendments to the Constitution, 2/3. The Convention of the States can propose amendments if 2/3 of states submit applications for such a convention. Okay, and like I said, there's already been a few states that have done that. Now, these applications must all deal with the same issue, i.e., limiting the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. Okay, this is, I mean, that's it right there. That would be the prime directive, if you will, of this Convention of the States should be the limiting the power and jurisdiction of the federal government. Okay, we need states to stand up. The founders knew the federal government might one day become an abuser of power. That's where we're at right now. So Article 5 was designed to counteract that. All right. So the strategy, we talked about the problem, the solution, and the strategy is, like I said, it's getting the convention of the states off the ground. Okay, so this is from Michael Ferris's site. He sets out two goals for this. All right, so the first one is this. He wants to call a convention for a particular subject rather than a particular amendment. Okay, so again, that was that application. So again, limiting federal power. Instead of calling a convention for a balanced budget amendment, for example, although they would certainly be supportive of that amendment, they want to call it for the purpose of limiting the power and jurisdiction. Okay, so that's the first goal, is not calling it for a particular amendment, but calling it for a subject. And the second is this. Grassroots is key to calling a successful convention. Okay, that's you and me. That's the people. That it's got to be from the bottom up. And we need to build a political operation in a minimum of 40 states. 40 states, that's hard, but doable. So if we can get people moving, and I plan on getting moving in this, and so you'll hear me talking about this more often, because I think it's key. I think it's our shot of bringing back liberty in America. We are still a free country, and I'm very thankful to live here, for sure. But the balance is off, and if we're not careful, if we're not watchful, we could end up somewhere very, very bad. All right, so those are their goals. All right, so I would urge you to support this movement. If you care about liberty, if you're worried about the overreach of the federal government, then you need to support this. Okay, and you can do it by going to conventionofstates.com and signing up. Sign the petition. Take action. Figure out how you can help. Volunteer. You know, share this. At the very least, share this. You know, encourage other people to get involved. Start talking to people about it. This has to come from the bottom up. But so let's talk real quick about some of the amendments that might be proposed at such a convention. Okay, because, and I mean, remember, you think about these through the context of those problems, the overreach of government through, you know, money, regulation, decision making. It's all those things that are out of whack. So one of the things obviously would be a balanced budget amendment. okay? That we have got to balance our budget. We cannot continue to spend over $1 trillion more than we bring in every year. And taxing more and confiscating more wealth is not the answer. At some point, you hit a point of no return. So you can, fine, tax everyone 75%. Well, guess what? It would crush our economy. Okay, I'm using an extreme example. If you taxed everybody 75% of everything they made, you would lose money in the end. It would crush the economy. People wouldn't do it. I mean, throughout history, people will not continue to stand for that. They won't do it. Okay, they'll work under the table. They'll develop black markets. I mean, that's not sustainable. Okay, so a balanced budget amendment for the federal government. We cannot spend more than we bring in. And, you know, it's ludicrous that we're sitting here arguing and fighting over this and that, and yet at the same time they pass spending bills filled with pork and garbage, both sides of the aisle, that way exceeds what we bring in. It's just ludicrous. And that's why I say that, you know, you can sit here and argue over left, right, Republican, Democrat, but they're essentially the same. Okay, another one would be a redefinition of the general welfare clause. Okay, so this is important to understand. The original view was the federal government could not spend money on any topic within the jurisdiction of the states. Okay, this is a really important concept, a really important principle. I actually want to explain this through a Catholic doctrine. Now, I'm not Catholic, but I tend to like this principle that they would, or at least they used to teach, with regards to social matters. Okay, and they called it the principle of subsidiarity. And what that is an organizing principle that matters ought to be handled by the smallest, lowest, or least centralized competent authority. Okay, so what that means is this: the federal government should not do anything that the states can do themselves. Okay, and in fact, when they do that, when it doesn't say that they can do that in the Constitution, they're actually breaking the Constitution. But as a principle, they should not do anything that the states can do themselves. The states should not do anything that, say, the county government can do itself. The county government should not do anything that, say, a city government can do for itself. And none of those should do anything that a family can take care of itself. Okay, that would be the principle of subsidiarity. It's decentralized. It's handled at the lowest level. Okay, it's decentralized government. That's essentially what it is. Okay, so subsidiarity, a very important principle. So we would need to bring something like that back. Okay, so that's what they would redefine the general welfare clause, because the original founding intent of that has been perverted. A third amendment could be some type of redefinition of the Commerce Clause. Okay, so again, the original view was that Congress was granted a very narrow and exclusive power to regulate shipments across state lines, not all economic activity of the nation. Okay, this thing has been used for so much abuse by the federal government. Okay, they basically apply that to everything. That's why the federal regulators are so much into the businesses, way down deep into the weeds, not even close to following the principle of subsidiarity in many, many cases. Okay, and all that was set out to do was that so that states couldn't basically treat each other like different countries. Okay, so in other words, you were free to move your goods via train across state lines and not have to get taxed and all these things in the way. So that's originally what it was designed to do. And for today, it's just been used to as a power grab by the federal government. So they would redefine it to make it more narrow, make it more clear. The next, a prohibition of using international treaties and law to govern the domestic law of the United States. This is really important. Okay, because if you're not aware, if a treaty is ratified in Congress, it becomes law. It becomes law. It should not govern domestic issues of the United States. This is why you see, of course, most people are not aware of this. You look at all these treaties with has to do with gun rights, with has to do with all these things. Like, for example, there's one recently that had to do with disabled children. But hidden in all that garbage, all that treaty garbage, was essentially taking away rights of parents over children. And it was very dangerous. You know, again, all these laws and treaties are all written with flowery language. It's like, well, who could possibly oppose that until you actually read it? Okay, it's kind of like the Food Modernization Safety Act. Well, that sounds pretty good, right? Well, hidden in that particular law is a bunch of garbage as well. A lot of people call it the Monsanto Protection Act. Okay, another one. Limitation on using executive orders and federal regulations to enact law. Congress has the exclusive power to enact law, not executive order. Now, many presidents have abused this power, so I don't really care, you know, what side of the aisle a president's from. If he's abusing executive orders, he's abusing executive orders. Okay, so now a lot of the current rhetoric with Obama comes around, and they'll say, but he's signed less executive orders than Bush or whatever. I don't really care about that. I mean, the bottom line is that he's playing parlor tricks with that, because between his executive orders and his memorandums, which usually hold about as much weight, or in fact they're essentially the same in many regards, he has signed more when you combine those two. So it's a parlor trick, but I don't even care. If Bush abused power through executive order, bad on him, and bad on any president that would do that. All right, so the next thing is imposing term limits on Congress and the Supreme Court. I think this is required. You have too many people that have been sitting in Congress for decades. They become part of the machine. It becomes all part of politics and power, and they need to get out of there. They need to be citizen servants. Maybe what we need to do is stop giving them pensions after one term in office. You know, they become citizens who serve, and they go back to being citizens after one tour, or maybe two terms. So term limits. And I think this is really important. All right, and then the final two listed on here have to do with taxes. So let me read both of them, and then I'll make a comment. First one is placing an upper limit on federal taxation, and then the second one, requiring the sunset of all existing federal taxes and a supermajority vote to replace them with new, fairer taxes. Okay, so what they're saying is that they want to basically scrap the current tax system and replace it with something, okay, whether it be the fair tax or a flat tax, or in the way I'd like to see it is no federal income tax at all. So let's go ahead and repeal the 16th Amendment and replace that with basically limiting federal government, saying, no, you cannot tax income. Okay, we did that for 150 years, and we still built roads, and we still functioned. We still had a military. You know, it can be done. We just need to actually live within our means. Okay, now, the roads thing, that's more of a property tax issue, which I have a serious problem with property taxes as well. What it turns is property, quote-unquote owners into renters in reality when they're told what they can do with their land, how they can do it with their land. And, oh, by the way, even if you work your tail off, pay off your mortgage, and you own your land free and clear, you're still going to pay taxes every year. Okay, so I don't think that's right. I think people should be able to, if they want to, buy a piece of land, and if they can and have the desire and they want to live off that land and they don't want to engage in the current monetary system where they have to go out and make money, they should be able to do that. That's freedom. That's choice. Property taxes don't allow that. Okay, I got off on a tangent there. Okay, what we're talking about here is the federal taxation. That's a local issue, the property taxes, and we should be fighting our state governments in that regard, or at least, you know, but some exemption at the very least for people who would, say, for example, want a homestead and they want to live off their own land, and they can show that they really don't use a whole lot of government services or anything else. They should be able to do that without having to be burdened down by property taxes. Okay, so that is kind of like some of the general principles or amendments that could be proposed that would be limited to kind of that sphere of restraining federal government, really. So with all this, what can you do? Well, let me propose to you two things you can do that are very simple. They won't take hardly any of your time, and you will have actually done something. Okay, so a lot of times we say, well, what can we do? Well, here, you can actually do something. Two very simple things. First is go back to my Facebook page, the Courageous Life Podcast, find the Convention of the States link that I put on there and share it. Or just go to conventionofstates.com and share it. Share it and encourage others to check it out. Just have them look at it. They might not even, in fact, most people probably don't even know that this is happening. It's been happening at the grassroots level for a year or two now. People trying to get this going. Okay, so that's one thing you can do is simply share the link. Share it on whatever social media platforms you use, and that would be a good thing, and start spreading the word. Start talking to people about it, okay? So that's one thing. Second thing is you can sign the petition. Okay, that link will take you to in a number of different places on there. It'll say take action or sign the petition. Sign the petition. And what you're doing by signing the petition is essentially when you fill out your information, you have to give your address, your home of record, is that automatically is sending a letter to your legislature stating your desire for a convention of the state. So you're encouraging your state legislature. So when I did it, it was the Idaho state legislature, to apply for the Convention of the States, okay, so to address all the things that we're talking about with the overreach and the balance of power that is out of whack between the federal government and the state governments, okay? So those are two very simple things. They take almost no time at all. Go to the website, sign the petition, and then share that on whatever social media platform that you'd like. Beyond that, what I've done is I have contacted this organization, Convention of the States, and basically offered up my time for volunteering to actually get involved. Whether it's trying to get people to do this, to sign the petition, so I'm recruiting essentially, but also to write letters to editors, to contact my state legislature personally by calling them, or even hosting a party in my home to basically explain what is happening, basically explain what I've laid out here today, and trying to get people involved, okay? And that's going to be important. Anyway, I find this very important, and it's funny how this quote-unquote worldview segment has now turned into basically the main topic. I do want to close by addressing one objection. So a lot of people would would object to an Article 5 convention because they think that it would create a runaway convention. That is, okay, if they got a convention there, then they just start going crazy. They, you know, start abolishing the Second Amendment, abolishing, you know, the First Amendment, whatever. That's almost impossible, if not impossible. Okay, and that's one of the things what I talk about is that strong single subject precedent. Okay, anything outside of that strong single subject precedent would be challenged in court and almost certainly upheld. Okay, as nope, it's got to be within that single subject realm. Okay, and then it also requires the ratification of 38 states. So again, this is not only is this challenging to pass amendments within that single subject realm, something rogue and well outside of it would almost certainly not be passed by 38 states. Okay, and there's no historical precedent. In fact, well, there's not been a state convention before, but I think it's necessary. And my response to that objection would be not only what I just said, but it would also be like, okay, well, what else are you going to do? Shall we continue to rely on the House and the Senate to roll back federal government? It's not going to happen. Okay. There'll be little things here or there that will likely, it's people grasp at straws. It's this whole idea of, oh, the lesser of two evils. And well, if we don't vote for Boehner, then we're going to get, you know, someone, we're going to have a Democrat in there. So we got to make sure we get Republicans in office. Well, what have they done for us? Right. So ask yourself that, be honest. And ask yourself that question. Have they really rolled back federal government? Have they really protected liberty? Have they balanced the budget? Have they been financially responsible? They love to quote Thomas Jefferson, wise and frugal government. But we don't see that from Republicans. And don't misunderstand me. We don't see that from Democrats either. But they really don't even claim to be interested in wise and frugal government, only in their agenda. Our scripture for today comes from Romans chapter 15, verse 4 and 5. For whatever was written in former days was written for our instruction, that through endurance and through the encouragement of the scriptures we might have hope. May the God of endurance and encouragement grant you to live in such harmony with one another in accord with Christ Jesus. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.